Welcome back to the Pelly Pod. In this episode, we're going to discuss the unfortunately disappointing trip, the two-game losing streak to the Utah Jazz after an exhilarating winning streak before that. It's just Tyler and I, and once again, we're dealing with new technology to record from our houses instead of in the studio, as Jesse is playing at Gaza Gaza with his band Born Astray. We appreciate you guys listening, and we hope you enjoy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Get on the take. Drew Holiday on the reverse.
Well, I will say this, though, Tyler. I'm happy we are getting the fuck out of Utah.
Yeah.
What, like, dude, it's just, before we get into, like, specifics and stuff, just, like, in general, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this on the side at all. We haven't really texted much about it, but, dude, it's just something about that team, man. I don't want to say scares me, but makes me nervous for sure anytime they play us.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night. If we had to play them in a playoff series, which is very possible, I feel like I'd be nervous about it as the team's currently constructed. It's surprising how well coached they are for such a new coach. That dude does a great job for their roster with the with the pieces he has. I mean, there's no bursting talent on the team, but when you look at it with Jordan Clarkson, Lauri Markkanen, and every time you watch him, you're like, this guy should not be this good. And they're draining threes, getting to the rim, making crazy shots, playing good defense. And their defense kind of stinks, but they play good defense again. They know how to play us. They play Zion the best at any team.
Yeah, I've think they just match up well against us. I mean, Zion's the only thing that aggravates Zion is height, right? Yeah. Like unreal length. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they have seemingly height all over that team. So without getting into any specifics, dude, all I've seen out of them the past 2 days is I feel like the Pelicans were the better team. I thought the Jazz just played better than the Pelicans, and that's what won the game, you know?
Yeah. And Utah kind of came out in their games with an intensity and physicality like we did against Phoenix, and we did not match them, at least in the first game for sure.
I agreed. I mean, first game, parts of the second game, you could tell. And just like just annoying things that you know can be corrected, like getting the 50-50 ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there was a lot of...
Like not over-helping on drives and leaving shooters open. Mm-hmm. Just like small mental mistakes. And I mean, I know we're going to get into some hot takes here in a second. I know people want to blame Coach Green, and maybe rightfully so in some areas, but part of it is the players themselves just making stupid plays and not giving the effort that we saw against some other teams this season, especially on a winning streak.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll even give some of that, you know, I think it's only fair to say some of that's on Zion. I thought defensively his body language was poor last night. This is after the second, this is during the second Utah game. I thought quarters one through three, it was just poor effort on defense. He was upright on his stance, arms down. You could tell like when he actually put the effort in, went for a rebound, played defense, you know, he defended, Utah kept trying to isolate him out to where he could get in foul trouble again, one, like he did in the first game. And I kind of jinxed that in our previous podcast, talking about that. But he did a better job of not fouling, so I don't know if that's why maybe he was a little more lackadaisical on defense. But he did a good job of defending Clarkson, but it was just the body language, like the Zion that we saw that was getting, you know, a stock every game. He was stealing the ball constantly in his defenders. Like, he kind of went back to the old Zion. Hold on 1 second. My dog's barking.
Go ahead. Go fix the dog. I'll continue this conversation because I think Zion is a good place to start. If we're going to give Zion his flowers during the win streak, I think it's fine to talk about some of the deficiencies we saw in the past two losses to the Utah Jazz. Zion, again, I think if you just look at his raw numbers, they were right there with his averages. But we did see some things that were a little concerning, to me at least. So Zion was great during the win streak. I thought he was good during this. But like you said, the thing that I saw was at times his defense was lacking. And the second thing to me that was lacking was he wasn't as aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, we saw him during the win streak just saying several times. I mean, against the Spurs comes to mind, even against Phoenix, there were just times where he's like, okay, I'm gonna go win the game.
Yeah.
And in this Utah game, and specifically the second game, because the first game was just a wash. The second game, man, I felt like I was waiting for that moment from Zion, and maybe it was because they had this, maybe because they had a little bit of success against Zion, but there was times, especially like in overtime and in the fourth quarter, where I was waiting for Zion to just get the ball and put it away, and he either passed it when he was playing point Zion or not playing point Zion. And that was frustrating to see after seemingly putting himself in the MVP race to putting himself into a position where he's not making game-winning plays on purpose, it looked like, too. That was frustrating.
Yeah. I'll say two things to that, to be fair to Zion on both ways, because I think it's fair to call him out, criticize, and then it's fair to understand why potentially that's happening. And the first one, I think, is offensive load is just so tremendous right now. If he's not on the floor, our offense dies.
It's true. Right now, it's true. Yeah.
Second game, he got three fouls. He had to come out the game. We had the lead at that point, I think, if I'm not mistaken, or right 13. Around. And immediately game snowballs, goes out of hand after that. Get back into it.
I mean, we were up by 13 in the second game.
Yeah, we were up by 13, and CJ specifically said it too. But we were up by 13 as soon as Zion came out. You know, we end up being up by, and he comes back in. By the time he comes back in, we're up by one. And like, maybe people can blame Willie, but Zion's got to get rest at some point, especially with how much he was on the floor. And that's my second point. I don't want to blame the refs entirely, because I think a lot of it does fall on us, but the way those games were ref compared to recent games was honestly, and I texted y'all that last night, it was very, 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 very frustrating to watch those games. I think they were poorly refed from just a game pace and flow standpoint, and it's really hard for people to get in a rhythm on the road against that, maybe more at home in your gym. When you got the fans behind you, you can take crazy shots. You got confidence. What does Utah got to lose? But, you know, it's hard for Zion to get a rhythm, to get out in fast break when it's whistle after whistle after whistle. So everything's constantly setting up in the half court. So I think that's another reason it was kind of tough for him. And you could see Utah getting touch fouls on one side, and our guys would have to get slammed to the floor, take hard hits, and sometimes still not get fouls. I'm not saying we didn't get deserved fouls, but there were times where you could see Zion was visibly frustrated he wasn't getting foul calls last night.
Yeah, I mean, and I say this all the time, man. It's very annoying how much referees dictate a game, because I think basketball is one of the most beautiful games to watch. You know, it's not slow like baseball. It's not slow like football. It's nonstop action. You can kind of compare hockey to that. But damn, I mean, for the referees just to control it, especially in this weekend series, you see it. And I was even complaining when they were calling some fouls against the Jazz, because it was like, man, I just want to watch basketball be played. You know, I don't want to hear referees blow their whistle. And it seems like, I mean, you saw that this past game, the Pelicans shot almost 30 free throws. The Jazz shot over 30 free throws. And it's like, man, we're watching a free throw competition, you know? As much as Zion gets fouled, I expect us to shoot that many free throws, but I'd almost rather, and I think it benefits the Pelicans in just like a free flow and movement type of game. I'd rather see both teams shoot single digit free throws as a total, you know? It just feels like that benefits us as a team that's trying to play with pace, trying to speed it up a little bit. But it's just, you're right though. This game was just too much, and then simultaneously not enough for Zion.
There were multiple points you could point at in that game where the reffing was, you know, from just a non-biased standpoint, subpar. For instance, when Larry Nance blocked a shot, he actually controlled possession of the ball before the clock ran out.
Right.
And
right.
They didn't give us that 0.8 seconds, which it's time to do something for sure. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, you catch a shoot.
Yeah. And we immediately go into overtime after that. They get three straight foul calls against us when we're on the offensive end. And then Utah had 5-6 possessions to get 4 points, which was enough to cushion the lead and make overtime non-existent. I knew the game was over 2 minutes in overtime. It's game over.
Yeah.
Not gonna be able to score.
I mean, just to reiterate that, just on 37 free throws for Jazz, 28 for the Pelicans. I mean, it's just too much, man.
And then the way Herb Jones is called fouls on is crazy to me. Crazy to me. It's not like he's getting handsy. It's like
they call
touch
30,
and go calls.
30 fouls against the Pelicans. It's just kind of bullshit. I mean, to be honest with you, we complain about it every time it happens. We complain about it on Twitter. It's just frustrating to see that, man, that guys like Herb Jones, they just don't reward him for playing good defense. They were this game, the game two specifically, rewarded acting on offense.
Yes. Yep.
If you're driving into the lane and you're flailing your head back, you're getting a whistle.
Yeah. I mean, how much did Kelly Olynyk last night just look like the goofiest dude alive?
I mean, Kelly Olynyk
driving into the paint. Just
there was some egregious act by him where even these referees didn't call it. But I mean, Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Clark. I mean, there was one play with Jordan Clarkson where him and Herb Jones were going for the same rebound. But Jordan Clarkson just fell on his ass, and Herb Jones did not. And they called a loose ball foul on Herb Jones. And that's huge because he ends up falling out of this game. And it's just like bullshit little ticky-tack stuff like this. And then what ends up happening is it snowballs. You call 2-3 early ticky-tack fouls trying to set the pace. Next thing you know, the Jazz are shooting free throws in two different quarters with over 7 minutes left.
Yes. You know, that's what I wanted to say. I mean, it sounds like we're complaining about the refs, but there's.
But then, so now it's a completely different game. But then on the other end, you're rewarding guards with these ticky-tack head flinching fouls. But time and time again, we see video evidence of Zion Williamson getting that same contact. But he never acts. He never flinches. But he gets that contact and then some, and we don't call it. So there is a disparity in that sense, and it's to say the least. There's a lot of things the Pelicans need to clean up, but it affects our play so deeply when you have a referee crew like the one tonight, and honestly, this past weekend, I thought both crews had a very difficult time managing the game in the proper way.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't even think it's just Zion. I think CJ was officiated pretty poorly as well. I saw him go up in the air, get bumped a few times that would have easily been called on the other end, and it was just straight ignored. It's kind of funny. I don't want to be the people always say this. We don't want to be the guys that bash on the refs, but you can't honestly have viewed that game from any point other than, I guess, a Utah fan and say that was a well-refed game.
Well, I mean, no, you know, the Pelicans had the Pelicans had some ticky-tack fouls on their end, but again, the problem with that is we don't have guards that are driving like that. You know what I'm saying? We have Zion Williamson that's driving like that. We have our wings are driving like that. Najee Marshall, thank God they called the foul on Najee Marshall. You know, he was huge in this game.
Yeah, I don't know what Najee...
You know, we have a lot of our offense is centered through Zion, and often at times Jonas Valanciunas, but they're just not getting the calls that the guards are getting. So when you have Jordan Clarkson, and dude, I make this joke all the time, but I wish Zion would get the Markkanen whistle. Like, unreal, dude. Every time I see Lauri Markkanen play, he gets the whistle. I don't know what it is, man. Is it because he's an attractive... white dude, you know what I'm saying? Is that what it seems to be? You know, it seems to be that type. I don't know. I'm kind of putting on a tinfoil hat here, you know, a decently looking waspy type character guy. Getting whistles is pretty prevalent, but no, I don't know. I'm going off track there. I don't know. I'm trying to make heads and tails of it. The referees were bad. And I think we have to talk about that. That's frustrating. That's going to come and go, unfortunately. I hate that it affects our games. I hope that our front office is doing something about it, because Coach Green, you can see Coach Green starting to get frustrated by it a little bit. But I do want to switch it up and talk about Coach Green, because way too many people, in my opinion, are very quick to say that Coach Green gets out-coached. It's like the most popular blog boy thing to say in Pelicans podcast Twitter circles. They'll just tweet after a game that says, Coach Willie Green got out-coached today. Without any follow-up, without any details, or they'll just say his rotations were questionable. You know, I just think that's a big cop-out. I'm kind of interested to see, like, what did you think about Coach Green? What do you think about those statements? And what would you say to people who just straight up say Coach Green got outcoached?
I think he was fine. I didn't see any question, at least rotation wise, and nothing was questionable in my opinion. Everyone who played should have played at some point. You could keep arguing Devontae Graham. He's going to get minutes as long as he's healthy, and not a complete wash on the floor. And that's just, you know, what he gets paid, and hopefully showing some kind of trade value. But rotation-wise, I can't even – there's nothing you can do. It's a, and not to mention the roster is constantly changing for him on what pieces he has available. One night he had Oze. One night he doesn't have Herb. One night he's got – you know, that's constantly changing. So that'll take time, but I feel like he's been way better on that, and I had no complaints with that over the Utah game. As far as out-coached, what – like schematically, what could he have done different to change the result of the game? It would be my question to them, because I mean, it's not Madden. I can't suddenly switch to a 3-4 base defense and I can shut down their centers. Like,
yeah, I think that,
and that's a joke obviously, but
the big thing that people were complaining about was just the nonstop switching. The Pelicans just want to switch nonstop all the time. And I think at the end of the game that people were upset that we were switching instead of fighting over those screens, because they were hunting mismatches the entire time.
Here's the thing with the fighting over screens. Who's going to do that for us?
Yeah.
You know, you got CJ, Devontae Graham. You don't have Jose. I mean, you could maybe say Dyson could fight over screens, but here's the problem. When it's guys like Jordan Clarkson, you're trying to fight over the screen. As soon as he gets a little space, he's pulling. So yeah, fighting over screen is space, believe it or not. You're not immediately going to get around Lauri Markkanen or Kessler.
Yeah, and my thing to that is I understand that idea, you know, like to where people are upset about that. I just think people need to realize that this is a two-way. You need to realize this is a two-way game, right? Like the players on the court are not only playing defense, they're also playing offense. That sounds like such a basic thing to say, but people were like screaming, put in Dyson. But Dyson offensively tonight made a couple of shots, but was making bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. And on top of that, when all of those switches were happening at the end of the fourth quarter where they were like hunting mismatches, I mean, Herb Jones has fouled out. You know what I'm saying? Like, our best defender who fights over those type of things was fouled out. Our best guard who fights over everything, Jose Alvarado, is sitting on the bench. And another guy who people don't realize this, Brandon Ingram, can absolutely be a dog on defense against players like Lauri Markkanen. And he's sitting on the bench. So, like, I understand it. I do get it. I just don't think that at any point of that game, I was like, what the fuck is my coach doing? He's losing us this game. Mm-hmm. To me, no. It was more of a, what the hell are our players doing? Like, why are our players over helping on drives? Like, that. Coach Willie Green has mentioned that we were doing that incorrectly. Like, we had to know our personnel. Yep. We had to know when to help out and on whom. And it seems like, unfortunately, this game, it seemed like Trey Murphy and even Herb Jones was getting caught helping out way too much on drives when the Utah Jazz is not a team you need to help out on the drive. Like, you kind of want them to drive the ball into the lane because that means they're not jacking up these three-pointers. And they jacked up a lot of three-pointers. I mean, they shot 40-something three-pointers against us. So it's little things like that. It can't always be roses. Losses say just the – I think, in my opinion, losses say just as much about this team as wins. And, you know, we're allowed to analyze and we're allowed to assess that. But to be shallow and say this was a loss on Coach Willie Green, like, it just feels very unwarranted and – it seems more like a clickbait type of tweet than anything of substance.
I mean, it's unfair.
Unfair.
That's a fully healthy Utah team on top of it at home, rested because they have two games at home, just like we did against Phoenix. You know,
and Lauri Markkanen didn't play for the past three games.
Yeah, and we're missing BI, and you could tell that it's a struggle offensively. And if Zion's not on the court, I mean, nobody can make a shot some quarters for this team right now, which I think is a real issue that
we've mentioned
can show
that on
its head. That is why
we've mentioned that before. This one thing that we struggle with a lot. I don't mean to keep talking to you, but I just want to say we've mentioned this before. This team too often goes on stretches without scoring for being this talented, but at the same time, Brandon Ingram could solve a lot of that, man. I hate saying it, but you have a guaranteed 20 some points. You have a guaranteed 4 or 5 assists just sitting on the bench.
Well, I mean, just from multiple standpoints, if you need a bucket, more than likely BI is going to be able to get you a bucket. Zion comes out, BI can still be in the game. You still have efficient offense. And I think the Pelicans and a lot of them hope, and you seen Willie do it last night. Willie was looking for any offense, so he got CJ in a little early in the third, and CJ just couldn't do crap for a minute there, and the offense really stalled out. And they had a good – and, you know, for people saying Willie got out-coached, Willie went right at Walker Kessler. And is that his name, Walker Kessler? What's his first name? I don't know, Kessler.
Kessler, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's Walker Kessler. Yeah.
Walker Kessler Ranger just immediately went to the head. I was like, what the hell? But yeah, Willie Green had CJ and Jonas just pick and roll him to death and just attack the shit out of him. And that was our only well constructed offense for a minute there when Zion wasn't in the game. So that goes back to the Willie point, but we need to see BI on this team ASAP as the trade deadline approaches to really see offensively if the need for shooting and offense is as dire as it looks to be at the moment, because 3-point shooting is a problem. We're 29th in the league in 3-point attempts. That's a problem. Willie knows that's a problem. I think we got up to 28, 27 at one point, and it's dropped down. But we just don't have enough willing shooters on this team. And I think that does need to be looked at. You can see Zion's just starting to take more threes himself. It's obviously a point of emphasis in film coaching staff meetings, whatever it is, it's a point of emphasis, because if when you go to the playoffs, you cannot be dead last in 3-point shooting. You're probably not making it, you know, to the conference finals doing that, because that will win team series is good shooting. And if you can't keep up, you're just going to lose in the math equation. I mean, you're the math guy, you know that better than anybody.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that needs to be looked at. But if the scoring is, if you have just such talented scoring, which it seemed like we did for a minute, especially with Zion running at the point, is it as big of an issue? And is it something you can say, hey, you know, maybe we go into the playoff as the worst 3-point, you know, we don't get our 3 points that way, but we live in the paint so well and we get our shots so efficiently because of our two superstars. It's not a problem for us. We can keep up with the 3-point teams. And guess what? When our shot's not falling, we're that same offense because we don't rely on the three as much. So that's going to be really interesting. And I don't think the Pelicans or us as a fan base should be ready to answer that until we see more BI with the team. So we really need to get him back as soon as possible to see that in play. But I wasn't really worried about Trey, but I imagine Zion with Jordan Clarkson out there last night.
I know,
switch Jordan Clarkson for CJ, and what's, I mean,
I go,
that's saying I go, stuff, but
I go so I go so back and forth with the 3-point attempts thing, man, because I, with a guy like Zion, you almost want to have the LeBron style build around him.
Yep.
Where, I mean, the blueprint for LeBron is LeBron and shooters. You know, like that was the blueprint for the Cleveland days, the Miami days. It just says surrounded by shooters.
Because he's going to get them open.
Because he's going
to
get them open.
How he drives
right?
to so, the paint. Yeah. You saw it last night against Utah.
Right. So that, I mean, you got to think that's the idea with bringing in a guy like Graham. That's the idea with drafting guys like Trey.
Except Graham is not great from three right now.
And he, you know, he's a roller coaster. It seems he's streaky. You know, I go back and forth with the 3-point thing. And just mathematically speaking, if you shoot 50% from 2-point range, which is phenomenal, right? Your expected return is 1 point. So 50% times 2 is 1 point. Which means if you go behind a 3-point line, to get a 1 point expectancy, you would need to shoot 33% from 3-point land. So that's actually really bad from 3-point land. So if you are above a 33% shooter from deep, you are expected to return more points than somebody who's shooting 50% from two. So mathematically, it makes sense, and that's why analytics guys love the 3-point shot. But, you know, on the other hand, what comes with that is if you take more shots in the paint, you get more free throws, and then so that's a whole other different story. So I go back and forth with it. You know, you see some teams make a living from deep, Golden State, Boston, Dallas, all those years with LeBron. Like, all those teams always lead the league in 3-point attempts, but then you have other teams that have had success without it, and it's completely derivative of who your stars are, you know? So you see teams like Philadelphia, you'll see teams like Toronto, guys, people that don't have a lot of 3-point shooters that want to get into the paint, have success without that 3-point line. Who are the Pelicans? It seems like we have to be better than 29th. Like, that's the only answer I have right now. It seems like in order to be successful, we have to shoot better than the second lowest team in the league, especially with Zion there. We should have wide open 3-point shots. You know, part of that's Trey going on kind of a slump here. I think he's under 40% now on his 3-point attempts. Part of that is CJ McCollum is in one of the worst slumps still shooting.
I think Trey's at 41.
He's at 41. Okay. But yeah, Trey Murphy, he's shooting 39% from three right now.
Oh, okay.
After his recent slump. CJ McCollum was shooting, quick Google search, 32% from deep. Devontae Graham, quick Google search, is shooting 37% from deep. So this is all players who should be shooting lights out next to Zion, guys we got because they can, you know, part of the reason we got because they can shoot. And then meanwhile, you got Brandon Ingram who's shooting 47% from deep, just waiting to return. So who knows? Maybe all of this, I don't want to put too much on Brandon Ingram's back, but I think we kind of can. Yeah, I think he's that good of a player. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy who's going to put up, I think he's going to end up averaging probably somewhere around 22 points per game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting over 40% from deep. This is our Rob. Nobody else in the league has missed their second best player this often. And we're the 2 seed. So, you know, there's a lot that's riding on Brandon Ingram, and you have to say rightfully so. I mean, Zion and Brandon Ingram are this team. Like, that's who this team is. All these other role players are amazing and they're excellent, and we absolutely need them to be successful. But the ceiling of our team is the core of this team. I don't want to say ceiling. I should just say core. The core of this team runs with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. So get healthy, P.I. I mean, goddamn, dude, just get healthy, dude. I don't know what it is, what type of voodoo magic we have against this, but I'm not going to judge this team too harshly until B.I. gets back.
Yeah, and I think we can kind of discuss what may be one of the ways that 3-point percentage can potentially open up. As far as the starting lineup goes, obviously CJ and BI understand they need to take more. I think BI was on his way to taking more. CJ is starting to take, I think, 6 or 7 a game. So he's at that point now where he's taking enough. He just needs to start making that a little higher clip. But it's really right now when you look at the starting lineup coming out there, Herb Jones and Jonas out there with Zion. And Herb Jones shooting less than 30% from three. It feels like it's hurting the offense a lot at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of what the solution is yet with that. And I'm not sure if the solution is, you know, changing Jonas out at big for somebody who can come in, but to find a stretch big shooting well from three that can give you the same rebounding that Jonas does, maybe you can find one that gives you the defense Willie's looking for. And that's why we've seen, you know, a lot of rumors around Miles Turner, but it is an interesting equation. And that's why I go back to the point is why we have to see the team with BI before I think the team can properly assess what the need is, because I think that's where the fan base, I don't want to say split on, but it's 3-point shooting, it's rim protection, because I think that's another issue for why Willie switches so much is because we don't really have any rim protectors on this team. Like,
right,
as good as
yeah.
Larry is as a shot blocker, he's not a rim protector. He's too short. I mean, he does a great job. He's great. He's a big glue piece on this team. But again, me and you've talked about this, but to rely on Larry Nance for 82 games and to be healthy would be foolish considering his past history. We hope that's the case. But to be like, yes, let's just make Larry the starting center and hope that wins out, like, that would be – I would be nervous about that.
Yeah, I don't think Larry's a starting center. And if you listen to the Locked On Jake – I'm sorry, Locked On Pels podcast with Nola Jake. I mean, Jake Madison did an interview with him, and Larry loves his role. He did not like being a starting center. He says his body, he was a starting center, and he said his body was deteriorating too fast. So he can't be the starting center. He says he didn't really like start. He said he started at the three a couple of times. He didn't really like that. He says he loves the position he's in. Backup, center, small ball five. Potentially 4 coming off the bench. He loves this role that he's in, and quite frankly, he's fucking good at it. Mm-hmm. So don't change Larry's role. I understand the question of replacing Jonas. Like, I actually understand that from people, and I get it. We should always be looking to upgrade. After watching Miles Turner play this year, because Indiana is a very interesting team to play, so I illegally stream them from time to time. They have a very interesting group of guys. Miles Turner does not seem like the type of dude that you would like for very long if he were in a Pelicans uniform. Lack of defense, lack of rebounding, inconsistent streaky shooter, but I think he's a better shooter overall than Jonas, better offensive talent than Jonas, a little bit better of a rim protector, but a little bit way better of a rim protector. But man, overall, the lack of effort from that dude seems borderline disastrous at times, especially for this team. So,
yeah, I don't know, man. He is shooting a high percentage from three. I think he's at 43% for the season right now, but 7.5 rebounds per game ain't cutting it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's offensively, he would definitely be an upgrade, in my opinion, compared to Jonas, but it seems like he does fit as well, man. But man, when I'm watching him play, like I said,
well, you watch him. Does he seem like a switch big like Larry?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, they do use him like that. He can do those things. I don't know, man. He doesn't seem to have that intensity on the court like we see with so many players on his team. But obviously, the fit is.
Well, one of the reasons you build a great culture, so this is going to be my devil's advocate point. I'm not pushing for Miles Turner or not pushing, whatever. With a culture that you build with Willie Green and his team and such a glued group of guys, would you maybe you could poison the well, or maybe you could convert Miles into a hard worker?
Well, and here's another thing with him too, right? So he's coming up. He's going to be a free agent after this year. And you hear Larry Nance talk about the guys on this team, and he was specifically mentioned himself and CJ McCollum and Zion Williamson. They took contracts that were less than their market value. So with Larry, he said he and his agent 100% could have played this year out and got a higher contract than what he got. And you're seeing that, like, Larry's probably worth more than his contract with what he provides on the court. CJ McCollum, same thing. I know people are saying we're going to regret this extension, but CJ McCollum's contract after this year goes down in value. It doesn't go up in value. So as the league's salary cap increases, his decreases. So his percentage of our salary cap is going to go down after next season. So you'll see that actually might be on. He's the 30th highest paid player in the league. By the time it's all said and done, he might be in that 50 range. So I don't think there's 50 better players than CJ McCollum on the court. And then Zion, obviously he got the max, but Zion had to include those less than ideal kickers in his contract about weight and things like that, which I guarantee you another team would have signed him to the max without any of those kickers or any of those criteria. So the reason I'm mentioning this is because these guys are sacrificing. I know it seems weird to say they're sacrificing money when they're getting paid millions and millions of dollars, but these guys are. They're sacrificing a little bit for the sake of the team, for the sake of winning, and also seemingly for the sake that the culture in New Orleans is so amazing right now around this team. Is Miles Turner willing to do that on a salary year? Playing less than half a season with the team?
That's a great question.
He's gonna go on his third contract where that's the money contract. Is he willing to, let's say he comes in and he's the perfect fit, right? And we can't really afford to give him $30 million a year, which supposedly he's looking for. Does he take a discount? I don't know. Like, I don't know what that answer is. He's currently only making $18 million a year, but he's going to want to make a lot more than that. And Jonas Valanciunas' contract, he's only making what, 15? I'll look it up. He's making $15 million this year. So is Miles Turner worth the risk of not signing with us after this year over what Jonas brings in the court? I don't know the answer to that. I do know I wish that Jackson Hayes was a better fucking player, because he could be the he could be the goddamn answer to all of this, because Jackson Hayes 100% has the athleticism to keep up with guys like Lauri Markkanen and Walker Kessler and these guys. And it sucks that he's unusable at this point, you know?
And my question is, like, so the assets that you would have to give up for Miles Turner, and like you said, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, right?
Right.
I mean, you'll have his bird rights, but you can guarantee by his personality, he's going to want a good chunk of money. He's a fucking dweeb, by the way. Yeah, he's the top three center in the league in three-point shooting, so somebody's going to pay him, right? Unfortunately. Now, to see that with Zion, would I can't say that wouldn't be attractive to have a 43% center by him would be nice. But for what we give up and what we might get in return, that would be tough. I don't know. Considering what it's Jonas gives you.
And then on top of that, let me just play devil's advocate here. Why not play this year out and see what type of contract he gets?
Yeah, because, I mean, if the market's right, you can trade Jonas at some point, right?
Why not play that game where Miles Turner, let's see what he's worth on the open market. Hell, fuck, we might even get a visit out of him. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. See what he's worth. See if we have to move guys around to bring this guy in. And also, at the same time, give us some time to see what Brandon Ingram is like on this team when we're fully healthy. So, to me, that situation sounds better, because you're not giving up. You probably won't give up as many assets in that regard. The downside of that is, you know, you can't trade guys like you essentially letting Jackson Hayes walk for nothing, but I think that's what's going to happen anyway. Yeah, I mean, Miles Turner's still going to be there this offseason, free agency. Why not? You know what I'm saying? Why not let that happen? I know the whole Bird's right situation comes into play. I'm not going to act like I know enough about that. But to me, this situation seems like a wait and see. And Zach Lowe mentioned that. If y'all haven't listened to him and Andrew Lopez on his latest podcast, Zach Lowe kind of mentioned, dude, he kind of just wants to see how this team plays out. You know, they're so fun and so exciting when things are working well. Like, why not see how far they can go?
That goes back to the original point of let's see with this version of Zion, because that was my complaint earlier in the season for Willie, is we weren't playing Zion correctly. I think that has been adjusted and fixed. I did see that as a complaint last night, by the way, not to get really off topic, but I did say, you know, why is Zion being set up this way? Probably multiple reasons, but I would guess that's a valid complaint. But to see if Zion's playing as we have seen over the past 10 games with BI offensively, let's see how that works. Defensively, we still have questions from a rim protection standpoint, but who are you going to get out there that's a better fit offensively that gives you that rim protection than Jonas? And that can also rebound, because, I mean, Zion's looking to be out in transition early, so he's not really there for boards. So let's say they do go for somebody like Miles Turner, it would have to be a gang rebounding effort across the board, and that's less transition attempts for a really good transition team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we see some of the other names. We see,
I mean, no matter what, somebody's going to have the center you're looking for that everyone's talking about doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and you're either going to get one or the other, right? Like, you're going to miss out
on something.
You know, I know Pirtle's name gets thrown out there. Again, like a much better defender, much better rebounder, it seems, compared to Miles Turner. But he doesn't shoot threes at all. He doesn't shoot threes. He hasn't attempted a single three-pointer. You know, so I don't, and are these guys even available? You know, like, we don't know. We don't know if they are or aren't. So I love speculating, man. It's fun. It's fun to see. I think the speculation really highlights the things that the Pelicans fans think are deficient with this team. So it's very fun to talk about. But at the end of the day, man, it's very difficult to read the tea leaves with the NBA.
Yeah,
we just don't know.
Not to mention Pirtle is shooting 50% from the free throw line. And here's the other thing I'll say. Center, when it's all said and done, especially in this day and age where the playoffs hit small ball, because come playoff time, you know, we're kind of discussing a moot point a little bit. We're really discussing the 82 games, but I think this team, me and you both think, is talented enough where we need to have the playoff discussion constantly about them. And that's what we're building for, not for the regular season. Like we've, you know, and I don't blame the fan base for doing that because that's all we've known for 10 years. But playoff basketball, as many know, is a totally different ball game. And Larry, if he is healthy, will be the, for all regards, the starting center at that point. But he can't do
that. Yeah, we saw
that.
We saw that with
games. Yeah.
We saw that with Phoenix last year. And if we go against a team that likes to go small, Larry is the perfect counter to that. But yeah, I mean, it's such a,
we knew there were going to be teams where Jonas was not going to be playable. We knew it. We know it.
Yeah. To the point about the regular season versus the playoffs, it's very interesting to see people's philosophy, because I've always been of the philosophy that every game matters. Like, two losses to the Utah Jazz is a bad thing.
Yes.
And it's as black and white as that. Four losses in overtime is a bad thing. We need to learn how to win in overtime. That might cost us a home court advantage in a series. So to me, like, that's how I've always viewed it. But then it was brought to my attention a couple of things that, like, the Houston Rockets used to do, the Golden State Warriors used to do, even the Miami Heat. They also heard this about the Toronto Raptors, where they knew they were in the playoffs and they knew they were going to be a top seed in the playoffs, a top four or five seed in the playoffs, these teams. So they literally treated the regular season as practice for what they thought they were going to do in the playoffs. So with Houston, and I specifically read about this because Mike D'Antoni was helping the Pelicans. He's still an advisor for the Pelicans.
Mm-hmm.
So I read about this with Mike D'Antoni. They would switch everything on defense and they would run ISO so much on offense during the regular season because they knew that that's what they needed to do in the playoffs to win.
Yeah.
Listening to the Toronto Raptors, they would switch on every fucking thing, regardless of their opponent during the regular season, because they knew at the end of the day, when it came to the playoffs, you had to switch and you had to play your guy. And that was just their defensive philosophy. Are we kind of seeing the Pelicans do that right now? Dude, it's crunch time. We are going to switch. We want to switch 1 through 5. We want to make sure that we can do this come playoff time. So let's practice now. If we lose the game because of it, we'll make adjustments, but let's do it now. Let's see. Maybe I'm reading way too much into that, but I'm just trying to connect some dots here.
Well, I mean, it's probably your reason Jonas's minutes has dropped and Larry's has increased, because Willie realizes he can run that more, and that's led us to being what people were worried about would even be a top 15 defense to a top 10 defense. So,
and that's what
you can't say,
you know,
it's not working defensively.
And I think about that when you just mentioned Larry's name, because in the playoffs, seemingly Larry's going to get more minutes than Jonas. You know what I'm saying? So is Coach Green practicing that now? Is he practicing that now for Larry to be kind of our closing big? Or if he's taking that mentality, is that an inappropriate thing to do if it's costing us games? Or is it a good thing to do to get as much practice in as possible to be prepared for the play? Is he even thinking about these things at all? I don't know. You know, so
if I had to guess, I would say he's doing whatever he thinks is going to give him the best chance to win.
Currently, like in the moment.
And I mean, if you watched Jonas last night, despite you thinking he needs to be more involved in the offense or not to get him more engaged, he was pretty unplayable from a defensive end point last night. I mean, him and Zion on the floor trying to cover the paint, neither one can get to the other side as a help defender fast enough, at least from what I saw last night.
Yeah, I mean, last night was rough on Zion, but Jonas is definitely so goddamn slow-footed, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, and Lily sees it, but... And that's where the fit's awkward, and why you try to get Larry out there as much as possible.
And I mean, and to me, that makes more sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a play in the moment.
Utah could just really take advantage of the fact that we do that, but even though it's our best option. They were a really good counter to us because they could put three bigs out there at once. Three talented, my thing is, skilled bigs.
My thing is,
that's a stretch for Kelly Olynyk, but.
Yeah, but he can shoot. So, I mean, if you put Jonas out there, they're just going to put Jonas in the pick and roll, you know, with a shooter and make Jonas decide, you know. Instead, they were hunting Zion out.
They've tried just to not to get too into the weeds from a schematic standpoint, but last year you saw it a lot. They tried drop coverages with Jonas, but in this day and age, it's too hard unless your center is just ultra athletic, big, like Anthony Davis or something. Run and drop in this day and age with how talented guards are is just a no-win situation most times.
Yeah.
And trying to what they call meeting at the level where Jonas comes all the way up to the screen, kind of hedges the ball handler a little bit, gets him from going and trying to pull back. Well, that Jonas slow foot speed kind of has him always on the guy's hip, out of position, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a really hard spot for Jonas to be in. It's not really his fault. It's just the way the game's played nowadays and how talented people are and, you know, how much the three-point line has really stretched out the floor for most teams. That makes it really hard for Jonas to be out there for so long. But, again, center is probably – you know, we spent a good bit talking about it, so you'd think it'd be important, but it's probably the least important position in basketball to have a all-around contributor, you know. You definitely want an impactful big, for sure, but does it have to be a center who can block, shoot threes, rebound, all that? Those don't exist. I mean, Anthony Davis is as close as you're going to get, and I think he shoots, what, like 32 from three? Right now,
right.
Like,
it's so funny that you said that because we got guys like Embiid and Jokic each year as perennial MVP candidates.
Well, no. But they You did catch me, but I'm totally excluding them.
You're fumbling over your words here for a second, Tyler.
Well, no, because you're right. But I'm talking about like literally every other center. Like, go beyond Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, who are freaks at their position, essentially. Any freak at any position is going to be, you know, absolutely incredible. And I was kind of going outside that, which is, yeah, Anthony Davis is number three. He's finally playing center. But outside of that, name an impactful center that you're scared of night-to-night basis besides those two.
Right. I mean, those, if you count Anthony Davis as a center, I mean, yeah, he is.
I'm just saying, for most teams, that position. Obviously, if you get the – you're not getting Joel Embiid. You're not getting Jokic, you know.
Right.
And every other team deals with it and wins without them because neither one has a title yet. So,
but, I mean, even, you know, you look at, in my opinion, great centers or way above average centers, guys like DeAndre Ayton. Right, guys like
they get played off the floor.
Yeah, you know, Miles Turner, Vucevic in Chicago. Like, these guys, I'm missing one. There was one more I wanted to say. I just lost it. But no, these guys come playoff time, kind of shrink, right?
They get played off the floor. I mean, even Jokic, in some regards, they're talking about is a playoff attainable run gonna happen for a Jokic team. Is it possible? Because defensively, it's just such a hard place to be, you know. And that's why I say that position, because that's what I meant. That position shouldn't be as big of a worry as we make it as a fan base, because pretty much every other team struggling with the same issue.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a point. You know, it's going to be a point of contention for our fan base if we kind of keep getting taken advantage of at the center spot. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we are often a team that takes advantage of things like rebounding. But when you see teams like Utah out-rebound us and out-hustle us, and you see their big shooting, it puts you in a position where you're like, damn, our centers aren't up to that skill level, you know? But
that's
I don't know.
What,
I just think
that's what Utah excels at right now.
Right.
Compared
right.
to the rest of the league. So that's unfair. I mean, that would be yeah. like, you know, Lauri Markkanen's one of them guys right now. He's just that. Is that good? But you're not going to get a Lauri Markkanen on the open market. So what are you looking for? You know,
right.
that's what I'm saying. Like,
and that's always the point. Like, you know, what mm-hmm. are you, what can you realistically get? You can complain all you want, but we're the goddamn number two seed right now. We're half a game beside the first seed and you're complaining about a center. You know yeah. what I'm saying? It feels like it's nitpicking and yep. it's understandable. People get upset after losses, dude. Like I could not record this podcast last night because of how upset I was over the loss.
We both were. I had to turn the game. It was you know? Easily the most. I can understand why people are frustrated and want to vent on somebody or blame somebody. In basketball, we do this thing where it's like, oh, it's this player's fault why our team is just absolutely incredibly bad.
Yeah.
And while that's probably somewhat true, that's never all the way the truth. And there's going to be a game where Jonas will probably win us one, but Jonas is responsible for us winning the rebound battle most nights, which is huge.
Yeah. And you know, I teach academic games at Sherman High School. Shout out to my team. We got third overall in the nation last year. We're going to go to Orlando this year and win first overall in the nation. But one of the games we play is called propaganda, where you have to point out different techniques of propaganda that are being used. And one of the techniques is called causal oversimplification, where people claim that a solution for a very complicated issue is easy. So the cause is oversimplified. And you see that all the time with the Pelicans. We lose in very complicated ways. And we end up having a easy cause for that, which is Jonas Valanciunas just isn't good enough. You know, that's a very oversimplified answer. When there are so many different aspects to the games where we lost, then it's a very, very basketball can be a very complicated situation. It can cause very complicated situations with a lot of different moving pieces. You know, I know Antonio Daniels all the time on a broadcast says basketball can be a very easy game, but it can be extremely complicated as well. You know, you have a lot of different things to manage. You have a lot of different lineups to manage. On top of that, you're going against other teams who are doing the same thing. You know, on top of that, you have to deal with just shitty bad luck at times. So, yeah, blaming Jonas is a very propaganda thing to do for this basketball team when they lose. But at the same time, we're the number two seed, y'all. You know, like, these are good problems. These are good conversations to have when you're the number two seed. It's a very shitty conversation to have when you're the Lakers. You know, I'm sorry, not the Lakers. When you're the 12th seed. What the are Lakers. The Lakers? Yeah, the Lakers. I don't even know what they are right now, dude. It feels like a waste of a Google.
I think somebody said AD right got hurt again. Wow. Surprising.
I like looking at the Lakers, y'all, because we own their draft pick. You guys know that they're currently the 12th seed. So anyway, I don't want to scapegoat Jonas just yet. I think he's going to be the reason we win a lot of games this regular season. I truly believe that. He's going to be a vital part to why we win a lot of games this season. And there were going to be matchups where he's unplayable. I mean, that happens, unfortunately.
Let me ask you this to put this exercise into play. What would you say is the top five reasons why we are currently losing? So I guess you can use the Utah game as an example, or you can
top
use games prior
reasons?
To that. Yep.
As a season as a whole, I think the number one reason we were losing to start was the inefficient use of Zion.
Okay.
So that would be my number one. Number two would probably be lack of three-point shooting in the modern NBA. Number three would be the unfair officiating.
Oh, and, wow. Let's ignore outside circumstances.
CJ McCollum slump.
Oh, yeah.
Injuries. Brandon Ingram injuries, to be specific. And number five, that would be a tough one for me, but probably lack of execution and crunch time situations.
Okay, so running your exercise, as far as you could see it, Jonas isn't even a top five reason why we're losing. So
absolutely,
would you even address that?
How Socratic of you to come up with a method like that. That was beautiful.
But for me, just to reverse yours a little bit, I put injuries as number one reason why we lose a lot of our games so far.
I didn't really order that, but injuries is probably
my number one. Could just say our five reasons, but
yeah,
I'd put, you know, I think inefficient use of Zion was a big one, but I don't think that was the biggest. I think CJ being as bad as he had been for most of the season is a huge one that everyone's scared to touch, reasonably so, because we have him for a while, but he was atrocious on offense, and he's not going to be a great defender for you. So if he's not giving you much on offense, he's a net negative on the floor, on top of the net negative on offense that Herb is. And that made the offense shrink a lot of times, and it made it harder to play defense, and that had us losing games. But I could put rim protection as a top five reason, because we do give up a lot of looks in the paint. So I think that is a valid concern, but it'd be four or five. So okay. Let's bring in BI. Let's see how big of a concern it actually is as far as us winning games. And if it looks to be one around trade deadline, that's a conversation for the front office to have. But I mean, looking at options and knowing Larry's going to play a lot of minutes, it's really tough to look at that position. But I think currently as is, because BI coming in is going to shuffle the rotation up a lot. Najee's been playing really well, but he's not a great three-point shooter. Herb's not a great three-point shooter. I think the three-point shooting is a huge deal that needs to be looked into, and I would be more worried about looking at that at the trade deadline than anything, because that can single-handedly win you games, regardless of your rim protection. I mean, if you're just shooting at tremendous rates, especially with the way Zion plays right now, there's not much a team can do. And for mistakes and looks at the rim that you may give up, what you can get on the other end is going to outdo it, I think, for this team.
Najee's 2-for-11 in his past four games from deep.
Yeah. So you think he'd get less minutes? I mean, Dyson on catch and shoot seems solid right now, but I don't think he's got a lot of attempts.
He's getting confident at it. Yeah. I mean, he's shooting 50% from deep. I actually looked this stat up the other day. Like, I think his past three games, he's shooting 50% from deep on like three attempts per game. So not bad.
And not to mention, Jonathan, people say how important this team is. Just to go to the injury point, you know, people say how important this person is to the team. I mean, we can't just act like Jose missing was just, you know, shrug off. Like, you can't say he's this important piece of the team and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, he missed, we still should have won. Like, well, if he's that important, then that's a reason we played worse,
right?
I mean, it's pretty fair. So the blame goes all kinds of places. I think that's just a moot point. I think that's something, you know, you can get 140 characters on Twitter that Jonas sucks instead of the 30 other reasons why we probably lost. So just an interesting, fun point to play. But I still feel very optimistic about the team. The thing that worries me the most at this point, and maybe, you know, for you, if we want to be downers, but I'm very optimistic on the team. Very, very, very much so that I'm not going to try to jinx it on the pod. So I'm not going to say it. But it's just getting BI back and getting him to fit in. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
it. I mean, my goal this year was to not be a play-in team.
Yeah, and I think the goal right now should be top four.
And, you know, I think it's elevated to top four.
Yep.
Out of the top, out of those top four teams, we're the least playoff experienced team there compared to the other teams that we're battling with. You know, Memphis these past few seasons has been in the playoffs, has won a playoff series. The Nuggets are going to be up there. They're battle tested. The Suns are battle tested. Even on some of these other surging teams, the Trailblazers, Damian Lillard's battle tested. The teams like the Clippers.
From a matchup standpoint, if we just want to take that center argument for one, the only one that you're worried about in the West right now is Denver and Jokic.
Right.
I mean, the other centers are going to be played off the floor just as much as Jonas is.
And
from Portland to Clippers to Memphis. I mean, I know Memphis fans seen a couple saying that obviously we fleeced y'all. It's like, dude, Steven Adams didn't even get on the floor one series for you. So
yeah, I mean he's unplayable in the playoffs, worse than Jonas is, honestly. But I mean, for me, Tyler, my goal is still the same. I want to elevate it to the top four. I just think it's a little early for that.
How do you stack us up against the current top four?
The current top four is Suns, Nuggets, Pelicans, Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. I feel confident in a playoff series against any of them.
Yep. So,
but I mean, still, my goal is I don't want to see the play-in. I still just want to get a playoff series because I feel really good about our chances on the road or at home if we are in a playoff series. So I just want to make sure that we get there. And from there, I think we'll be okay. So that's still my goal. All of that's still attainable. I think we're overachieving a little bit for our injury situation. Mm-hmm. And I think it caught up with us on the Jazz, with the Jazz.
Yeah.
So Zion was playing lights out. And other than that, man, we're just battling injuries. CJ's still not 100%. Herb Jones isn't 100%. Jose's not 100%. Brandon Ingram has missed 10 games in a row now. So let's just get healthy. Let's see what this team can do fully healthy. And then we'll start talking about some of those top four seed goals when we see this team at full strength.
Yep. I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. I'm super optimistic about the team just because Zion is maybe he's getting a little up and down if the Utah series is to be considered. But him really turning into that guy, I think, has elevated this team to a level where other teams are going to be terrified when it's that. And then, oh shit, there's Brandon Ingram. Like,
yeah,
you know, and that's just such an easy thing to say, but like, I think it's one thing to say that on paper in the off season, but watching this version of Zion was what we know BI is capable of on a night to night basis. I think,
right.
Man, let's just see that. And can you imagine if CJ actually starts hitting his shots?
I know we need to get that. He's flashing it, man. We need him to be fully there.
He had 30 last night, I think. So he played better. I think he was shooting around 50%, but there's still like stretches. He is just ice.
I think
he'll be
more efficient. And we saw CJ play his best next to BI last year.
Yeah,
and they haven't played much with each other at all.
Yeah,
so I love that people started double teaming Brandon Ingram. What happened? It got CJ with all the space in the world to work with, and he didn't have to dribble so much. You know what I'm saying? So right now, next to Zion, that's kind of not happening. It's a little bit different of a dynamic, but with him next to BI, man, it just seems to open up a lot for him, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, yeah. So we got Phoenix and Milwaukee coming up. Any predictions?
No, I'm not a prediction guy anymore, Tyler. I'm not doing that anymore. I'll tell you this much. I just want to see.
Do you feel good about Phoenix?
I always feel good about our team. I always feel good about our team. As long as Zion is on the court, I feel good about it.
Against Phoenix, at Phoenix.
Yeah, I do. They're going to be without DeAndre Ayton, who was the only reason they were in that game anyway. So,
man, imagine if it was 1992, DeAndre Ayton would be an MVP.
DeAndre Ayton's a beast. I love DeAndre Ayton. I kind of wish he was a Pelican, if I'm being honest with you. I really like his game. but, yeah, I mean, they're without DeAndre Ayton, so I feel good. The Bucks make me nervous at home, but it feels like we're a different team at home as of late. So, we'll see, man. Like I said, health is the biggest thing for me. Hopefully, you and I can record tomorrow. But to be honest with you, probably only going to record if it's a win, Tyler.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
But I'm off of work. I'm off of work especially, now for the next couple of weeks, so I'll have a little bit of time.
Well, I would say this too, like with Phoenix, like even if we lose tomorrow, like what can you really get out of that?
I mean, much. I got to see the game.
Yeah, like I don't. Well, it just depends on how they lose, of course. But like, it's not suddenly going to tell the series. Like, I feel like, I don't know.
No,
but
I'm just happy Lauri Markkanen isn't on the Phoenix.
Yeah,
Suns,
I'm actually going to the Bucks game. It's friend, one of our.
Yeah, dude, how are you getting? How are you getting these sweet ass tickets, dude?
He is loaded.
Okay. All right,
It's his birthday. We're going to a suite for the game against the Bucks, so that'll be awesome.
Well, shout out to Matt. I wish we were friends, dude.
Well, I'll let you know if I get an extra ticket or not.
All right.
But I actually am going to be able to have a couple tickets coming up, so we have to catch more games. But we've been going to way more games than we said we would this season.
I know, man. I've been going to as many as I can, if I'm being honest, dude. Oh, and shout out to, she doesn't listen to this podcast, but my friend Sophie got me one of the Pelicans hats that they gave out. So I am now a proud owner.
Got to do a live one where you and Jesse are wearing it.
It's unfortunate, man. I had tickets to that game, but couldn't make it. Gave away those tickets. Didn't realize they were giving hats out. So awesome. But anyway, I got one now. I'm all excited for that. I got three puzzles, by the way, from the Lego day where they passed out the Pelicans Lego thing. So I got three of those I got to put together.
I got one.
Thankfully, it's only 1 million pieces. I mean, Jesus Christ, Pelicans.
I saw somebody saying like, oh my God, Pelicans, I'm struggling with this so much. And they said they sent the GIF of or a video of Willie Green saying, you got to fight.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to watch that video to get motivated to do that shit. Like, Jesus Christ.
It's rough. It's bringing back.
But yeah, dude, hopefully tomorrow's a positive one, and we'll try to record tomorrow, try to get more content out.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right, boss.